So we revisit the children's book author who wrote that book on grief and is now being charged with the murder of the man she wrote the book about to help her kids deal with the grief for the murder she might have committed. That's kind of a fun one. Corey Richens is who we're talking about. She has a hearing this morning, actually, and we will cover what we can of that for you. If there's audio, we'll bring it to you. If not, we'll, of course, bring you the information of what came out of the courtroom. The drama involving Corey has been ongoing now for a couple of months. She's a woman who stands accused of a very, very chilling crime. She continues to, I guess, try and up her public appeal, her way of getting things out there in the public on a media level. We'll talk about that in a little bit because Netflix comes into the mix. She's accused of administering a fatal dose of potent opioids, fentanyl, to her husband, 39-year-old Eric Richens, ultimately leading to his sudden death on March 4th of 2022. It's a very grim saga. It's fraught with betrayal, suspicion. It's attracted worldwide attention. And with recent developments concerning the imposition of a partial gag order, it's stirring even more interest. As of about a week ago, the presiding third district judge, Richard E. Mrazek, issued a partial gag order in the case, also known as a protection order. This directive primarily restricts the attorneys involved in the case from making public statements that could potentially sway public opinion or jeopardize a fair trial. This move comes in response to an appeal by Summit County prosecutors for a broader gag order akin to the one etched into a similarly high-profile Idaho case involving Brian Koberger and the college students. Judge Mrazek, however, refused the comprehensive gag order request, citing the constitutional significance of free and unfettered expression. There's actually a hearing on the Koberger one that took place on Friday. He stated that there were already adequate mechanisms in place to the safeguards and fairness of the trial, such as the use of an in-depth or voir dire process to select unbiased jurors. He also suggested the possibility of a change in trial venue should the situation escalate uncontrollably. To comprehend the gravity of Richens' charges, we have to delve into the circumstances surrounding Eric's untimely death. He was found dead at his home, and a state medical examiner's toxicology report confirmed his cause of death as a fentanyl overdose. The lethal dose he had in his system was roughly five times the fatal amount, which raised some eyebrows, given Eric was not a known drug user. Following Eric's death, Corey Richens authored a children's book geared towards helping families cope with the sudden loss of a loved one. She's currently facing severe charges, including aggravated murder, a first-degree felony, and three counts of drug possession, while he intends to distribute a second-degree felony. In the course of police investigation, several startling revelations have surfaced. Firstly, Corey had been purchasing fentanyl from a known drug dealer. Secondly, there had been instances where Eric had accused his wife of attempted poisoning. And thirdly, Corey had taken out nearly $2 million in life insurance policies on her husband, unbeknownst to him. These ominous findings led to Corey's arrest over a year after her husband's death. In recent developments, the Summit County Attorney's Office, overwhelmed by the media interest in the case, proposed a gag order similar to the one enacted in the Idaho murder case. Prosecutors cited incessant inquiries from global media outlets, including documentary filmmakers, as a potential threat to the integrity of the trial. Despite these appeals, the partial gag order focuses solely on the attorneys involved in the case, with Judge Mrazek emphasizing their responsibility to uphold pre-established rules of professional conduct. The measure aims to protect the proceedings from potential prejudice caused by public communications. The defense, represented by attorney Sky Lazaro, voiced concerns that this gag order has very strict limitations. Lazaro argued that it wouldn't inhibit the media from continuing to cover the case, potentially creating an unbalanced narrative as they'd only publish the already available information. Yes, it does do that. And I think the attorney is exactly correct because they're looking at the Koberger case and all of the problems with the social media, with podcasts, with reporting in the media and people speculating on this and that. Guess what? It's going to fucking happen no matter what. So if you give us information that we can work with and talk about, it actually works to your favor. It doesn't work against you, because people end up talking about theories and this idea and maybe that rumor or this rumor. And yes, things get out of control very quickly, especially on some of the YouTubers out there that were covering that one. I mean, I dive into that a little bit just to see what people are saying, and it goes to bizarro land very, very fast. So I think reasonable amount of information is fair. Lastly, in response to the defense's plea to allow Richens to appear in civilian clothing rather than a prison uniform, the judge granted this request but left the level of courtroom restraint up to the Summit County Sheriff's Office. That's where it's sitting right now. There is a hearing, like I said, a little bit later in the day today, Corey Richens' detention hearing, and we'll bring you any information on that as it comes out.
Well, I think it's really interesting how people are just enthralled by this case. It has all the makings of a lifetime movie, doesn't it?
It will be a lifetime movie, I'm sure.
Well, it probably already has in some form or another before it even existed.
Yeah, this story is just really, really similar.
Yeah, I don't watch that network very often, but I feel like every time I have, it's some woman who's killed her husband and it's shocked the entire community. So, it's kind of the same thing.
Very much so. This is going to be interesting to learn more about why she did it, how she did it. We kind of think we know how she did it now. But I don't know. Is this really that complex of a case, or is it just quite simple? She wanted out of this marriage. She learned that, fentanyl can kill people pretty quick. Attempted that. Then tried to play innocent, tried to do everything it could to look like she was a struggling single mom, just trying to help her kids get through all of this pain, and nothing else would be looked into further. I think what probably made this happen, made the investigation go where it went a year later, is the fact that her husband had confided in family members that he suspected she was trying to kill him earlier and survived.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a huge problem. You don't find, I'm assuming your fiance has not confided in people that, hey, if something happens to me, look at Tony. No, that's not how happy relationships work.
No. I mean, I had to do that in my last one, but not in this one.
And you're not joking about that either.
I'm not. It's a very scary place to be in, especially it sounds like he was doing exactly what I was doing. To be there for the kids. You feel safer if you can be there to protect versus have them be in the presence of someone that you don't fully trust. In my ex relationships, I was never poisoned. None of my children were, nothing like that. But it was, I got to be honest, the thought, did cross my mind a little bit of this. I know this feels weird and strange, but that's all settled and gone. But it was startling to ever have to say those words out loud to anyone.
Well, yeah, you don't expect to be in that situation. And it feels very surreal, I'm sure. And even now to look back at it and have kind of this, watching this case unfold, and you're like, wow, I survived somewhat similar situation.
It's always a wake-up call when you exit a relationship and you start reading books about the abuse that you went through. And you're being referred to as a survivor.
Yeah.
Because that I never really thought of like that. And then I learned, like, oh my God, like I did.
You did. And I don't think a lot of men look at themselves as survivors. Women will readily go, yep, I survived that. Mm-hmm. I was a victim. Men, it's in our country, in our world, we don't usually give men those titles. They don't want those titles, but it's a true statement. It's, you absolutely did survive it.
Yeah, I mean, in far more detail than I'm going to go to on the air, but it was, we survived, but it was, it's scary. And it can come on very quickly. It can be a very slow eroding thing that happens in a relationship where you don't realize just how bad it's gotten until it's gotten that bad, because it happens every single day. It's like watching a kid grow up. Like, oh my God, how tall did you get like in the last week?
And You don't see it because you're right next to it. It's exactly. It's the boiling frog analogy.
100%. So if any good comes out of this, I hope it's something where men who are in those sort of situations you know, and women too, but this was one that was specifically about the man that was being abused and then had his life taken in a very nefarious way, that they stand up a little bit more and recognize some of those symptoms, if you will, of someone that you supposedly do trust, not necessarily having your best interest at heart, or maybe even being a danger to you, and getting out of that situation before this sort of thing happens, like it did in the Corey Richens situation. And keep in mind, and this is an interesting analogy to it, or an interesting antidote to it, I should say. If your partner is capable or of getting rid of you, they're capable of doing the same thing to the children.
Yeah. And it goes back to, you know, when you're on the plane, you put your own oxygen mask on first, yeah, and then you can help others. That's exactly what that comes down to.
Yeah. If you truly want to be there for your kids and you're in that situation, you have to get the kids and get out. It's not just run for your life. Get the kids and get out and immediately report your concerns. And then that can put different safe orders in place until things can progress. And our system's not always fair. And that's the scary part. I think that's why I stuck around, because I thought, I don't have a chance. just not because I did anything, but because I have a penis.
Absolutely. Yeah. You are the perpetrator in most cases,
no matter what.
In, you know, law enforcement's mind, they don't look at it as, oh, you mean she's coming after you? Mm-hmm. Oh, we thought it was the other way around. You're not given that benefit of the doubt that, hey, you're the one in danger here.
And it was interesting. I had this conversation with my fiance not that long ago, and she's like, well, women have the same thing too. And I agree. They do. I was just bringing it up from a different perspective, but women face the same scrutiny sometimes where they're not believed. And it's just, oh, look at how many times we've seen it in situations, Gabby Petito, many others where, you know, police are called in and then it's like, well, it looks like this is domestic. You guys can figure this out. And then horrible things happen. So it certainly does happen both ways, without a doubt, and probably far more towards women. But men are not excluded from this sort of thing happening to them as well. So, very dark case. We'll continue to cover it for you right here. Murder in the Morning from the Hidden Killers Podcast. You like the podcast? You want access to all of our episodes ad-free? You can get it through Apple Podcasts. Do check that out. Become a premium subscriber there right now. Even try it for 3 days free. For Stacey, Tony, stay with us.